Dear listeners, welcome at this episode in the fourth season of the Meet the Expert podcast series. In this series, together with well-known experts from around the globe, we explore challenges and opportunities in the big veterinary world. And in this episode, we take a trip down the road of big economics once more, and we'll do so with Lance Mulberry, based in the United States. Aim of this podcast will be to get a better understanding of the concept of homogenizing pig growth. Welcome, Lance.
Hi, Vincent. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. The Meet the Expert podcast series is a co-production of Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health and Pig Progress. My name is Vincent Terbeek. I'm editor of Pig Progress, and I am the host of today's episode. Our guest, Lance Mulberry, is located in Columbia, Missouri, United States, and he describes himself as a consulting economist. He works for Knowledge Ventures together with his business partner, Dennis DiPietri, and as such, he is helping out producers as well as other members up and down the pork production chain aimed at profit optimization. And he does so not only in the United States, but all over the planet. Just to read aloud an intriguing sentence from his bio, Lance specializes in bioeconomic modeling, which examines the effects of biological variation on economic output and AI forecasting. That sentence alone intrigues me, so we'll get back to it later. Welcome, Lance, once more. Before I get to that sentence, could you briefly introduce your business a little bit better and explain in more detail what it is that you're doing?
All right. Well, again, thanks for having me, Vincent. Well, a little bit about what we do. Myself and my business partner, Dennis DiPietri, who you mentioned, we're both consulting economists. Dennis has been doing this for many years now, and I joined the firm back in about, I think it was 2015. and so, as you mentioned, we work primarily with producers, but, you know, everyone involved in pork production up and down the chain. I'd say the idea of profit optimization, especially when we think about variation, has been the core of our business for a long time. It was a discovery that Dennis made when he was working with a producer many years ago. He started looking at individual slaughter weights, and he saw just how much variation was impacting that producer, and so ever since, it's been at the core of our business.
Excellent. Well, we get back to the variation a little bit later. Just to get to know you a little bit better, in the intro, I mentioned that you are working with producers all over the planet, industry partners all over the planet. Could you give a bit of an idea whereabouts you have been having customers, just because we've got listeners from all over the planet as well?
Right. So we work with producers here in the U.S., but we've also are currently working with producers in China, Eastern Europe. We've got new clients in Brazil that we're beginning to work with, and other parts of South America. So really all over the planet, as you mentioned.
And in the intro just now, thanks for that, I read aloud that you are specialized in bioeconomic modeling. I think that could do with a little bit of a clarification.
Yes, it's a fun buzzword to throw around. but really, it's a pretty simple concept. Agriculture is a just inherently variable process. I mean, from the weather to prices, to growth, whether we're talking the growth of crops, animals, whatever it is, everything is variable in agriculture. And so when we look at that variation, really what we're trying to address is, how can we better understand the economics and the optimization, economic planning behind just that very intensely variable production process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's substantially different than, for instance, industrial production, because
exactly.
There you can strive for standardization, so to say.
Exactly. And most industries are fortunate that a lot of their production is very standardized. You know, there's a lot more certainty, I guess you might say. You know, if you think of a factory, for example, and assembly lines, you know, it's a fairly straightforward process where, you know, everything should be working in a particular fashion. In agriculture, like I said, everything is variable, so we try to really focus our work in all those moving parts, bringing them together and kind of developing a better economic understanding of what's happening.
Understood. Now I go back to that sentence that you mentioned, that I introduced earlier on, and there was also the concept of AI forecasting in that description. What is that exactly?
So AI forecasting, or artificial intelligence, has been a very useful tool, really because there's an abundance of production data out there that I would say largely goes unused. You know, we take measurements and records of everything all along the production chain, and these AI forecasting tools really allow us to utilize a lot of that data that would previously have been unused. And it's also a useful tool, like I said, since it's a intensely variable process, AI is able to kind of help sift through some of that variation that might be a little bit tricky for more traditional models to handle.
Yeah, so they help to kind of see what, if we change this, then the outcome might be that, something like
right.
That?
Right, exactly. So it's just a more powerful tool than traditional standard models. Like I said, just because we're able to use a lot more data, mm-hmm. and it's able to see through a lot of these variables and kind of get to a conclusion a little bit more efficiently or effectively.
I see. I always ask about AI because in this business, it can also mean artificial insemination.
That's right. Yes, we're talking about artificial intelligence here.
Intelligence. It's good to have that clear. I was wondering, could you give an example of that, that AI forecasting? Do you have something in practice that could illustrate that?
Yeah. Some of the projects that we've been working on with AI forecasting, we have been looking into price forecasting, short-term price forecasts, just trying to gauge the amount of variation in hog prices, commodity prices. Another tool that, or another way we've been using it, is trying to identify how much variation in weight is going to be in a finishing barn at any given time. And so the idea behind that is to just give a little bit more insight to the producer as to what maybe like the seasonal effects of variation might be in their barns. So they're prepared when it comes time to market.
And knowing what happens in the barn and knowing what happens, what would be the output, can all help you to do your job better in pursuit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, when we spoke earlier, and now during the podcast, you've already mentioned the word variation a couple of times, and that it is essential to your job, and also that it was essential to Dennis's job. Why is that variation at the core of everything you do?
Well, you'll hear variation a lot more, so I guess that's a forewarning to everyone. But it's important to me because when I first started with Knowledge Ventures, the first big project that I was working on with Dennis was we were trying to make the case that traditional means-based economic models, ones that just use average values, systematically underestimate the cost of disease. And the reason for that is they don't look at the lightweight pigs in a barn. So when disease hits, it tends to skew the weight distribution to the lightweight side. And these traditional models are just looking at the change in the mean. But the challenge comes in that lightweight animals in most markets have a asymmetric valuation. So they're worth, you know, per kilogram less than just, you know, that weight change, because they're being penalized by the packers or the slaughterhouse. And so because these traditional models were not accounting for that asymmetric economic impact, they were underestimating what the cost of disease was. And so when you kind of take a step back and see that this is a industry-wide problem, you know, it really got me fired up to pursue this more, because you see that, you know, this isn't a problem for one producer in one country. This is producers globally face this challenge, and you know, that there's kind of a core misunderstanding about the cost of disease.
Yeah, and I get from the, if you would focus on averages, and you think, okay, well, we've got a couple of lightweight pigs, we've got a couple of pigs that are too heavy, in the end, it will equal each other out. But that isn't exactly the case, is it?
No, you know, that is a something that has been brought up to me a few times, where, you know, the heavyweight pigs cancel out the lightweight pigs. There are two problems with that. One is that when we think of a weight distribution, it's almost never a normal distribution, so symmetric around the mean. It's almost always skewed. And then when we talk about disease, that causes it to skew even more. So it's a not normal distribution, you know, in the least. So if you're kind of using that logic of heavyweights cancel out lightweights, mm-hmm. you're kind of making a fundamental mistake in your estimations. The other thing is, even if we were to assume that it is a normal distribution, the fact of the matter is, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, most pigs, when they're taken to market, they receive penalties or premiums from the slaughterhouse based on weight. And those penalties and premiums are almost never symmetrically distributed around the ideal weight. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on the market that you're in, they may favor lightweight pigs more, so they'll have less penalties. They may favor heavy pigs and they'll receive less penalties. So it's different from market to market, but it's never a perfectly symmetrical valuation. Because, as I mentioned, the slaughterhouse is trying to then process these pigs. And so they have certain costs that they have to take into account. So they might say, well, you know, based on our costs, it's not worth as much to us to process a smaller pig, so we're going to penalize those more. Or they might say, you know, there's a lot of demand for smaller, leaner pigs, so the penalties are less. So mm-hmm. it's a asymmetric valuation. So those two factors alone kind of mean that if you're just looking at it averages, because you're assuming there's a normal distribution behind it, you're going to be making some mistakes along the way.
That is very clear. Do you feel that this problem is underestimated worldwide across the board?
I would say very much so, though there is kind of a change in the industry where I think people are starting to become more aware of this. And I think part of that is, you know, as pig production becomes more competitive, you know, it's a global market. As it becomes more competitive, producers are looking for ways to, you know, extract more value from their pigs. So they're having to kind of broaden their horizons, so to speak, and look in these new avenues of where they might be able to increase their profit margins. And so in the past, I think it was something that they could afford to not take as seriously, but now I think they are looking a little closer.
I see. Our technology is moving on, so that helps them a lot as well.
Right.
before we look into the animal health angle of this whole idea, what can cause the variation? Well, the disease are obviously one, but are there other causes for variation?
Well, you know, there is, as I mentioned, kind of at the top of the show,
mm-hmm.
You know, agriculture is variable, and so there's just going to be a natural amount of genetic variation. You know, so there, it's a fact of life. The next biggest cause of variation is going to be disease.
Mm-hmm.
But then apart from that, it's going to come down to nutrition and management. You know, how well are we managing our pigs, the stressors that they might be put under, things like that, that could influence variation. But yeah, so it's going to be genetics, disease, nutrition, and then kind of the human factor.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a clear direction. Okay, well, as we are talking about animal health here, let's look at that. Could you name some viruses, bacteria, which have always a strong effect on homogeneity?
Well, I mean, you know, of course, depending on what phase of production you're in, you know, whether it's breeding, finishing, or breeding to finishing, you know, of course there's going to be diseases that impact, you know, each of those aspects of production differently, and, you know, some more serious than others. So it's hard to pick one, but one that we have spent some time looking at is PRRS. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think people understand, you know, how economically devastating PRRS can be on the breeding side.
Mm-hmm.
But we've done quite a bit of work to show that it has a substantial impact, you know, even in finishing. You know, so I think it might not be as common as it once was, but you can see there's a little bit of a mindset. Well, in finishing, it's not too bad. Those pigs are going to go to slaughter anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's something that we don't have to spend as much time trying to control for as we would on the breeding side. But like I said, it can have a very substantial impact, and it's that impact is largely due to the increased amount of variation.
I see. And now we're talking about subclinical or clinical, clinical disease here.
Most of our work has been focused on clinical, though we are starting to begin some projects and are currently working on some projects looking at subclinical PRRS. And we're also really starting to look at the co-infections that, you know, typically mm-hmm. crop up alongside PRRS. And again, it's a big variation is the star of the show when it comes yeah. to the economic damages, because, you know, when we start to look at these co-infections or, you know, even in subclinical cases, what we tend to see is that there's going to be a subpopulation of pigs that just don't put on weight like their healthier counterparts do. And so when it comes time to market those pigs, what you're going to see is that the bottom 20% of the pigs, the lightest 20% of the pigs in that barn, are going to be significantly lighter than their counterparts.
Yeah, and that's what we don't want to have when they can are going to market, so to say.
Right.
What difference can the use of vaccines make in this respect?
Well, it can make a tremendous difference. The big thing that we have seen in our work is the use of vaccines really helps pull in that lightweight tail, because we've seen in trial data and in on-farm data, it's really that light, like I said, about 20% of the herd that, you know, they kind of get pulled back in towards the center, towards the mean of the distribution. And so in some of those cases, you know, it doesn't have a big impact on the average weight for the whole barn or for the group being marketed. But by pulling in those lightweight animals so that they're a little bit heavier, not growing so slowly, can have a huge economic benefit, because what typically happens for most producers is when it's time to market, you know, if you're marketing in batches, so you'll bring a truck, you'll fill it with the heaviest pigs, take them to market, then, you know, a few days later, you'll come and take the next truckload and so on. Well, when you finally get to that lightest group of pigs, it would be great to let them spend more time in the barn to get to a better, more profitable weight. But that's a luxury that most producers don't have, because there's a new group of pigs waiting to be placed into finishing. So they kind of have to be marketed as is.
Yeah.
And they're, so they're, you know, underweight, and it can just be a real economic loss on that last load. So with vaccination, like I said, the big impact that we see in finishing is it really improves the performance of that last load.
And now everyone who is listening would like to know, well, give me data, show me how much does it yield? Do you have calculations for that?
Yes. So we have done, this was actually a project that started in the U.S. with Behringer, where we were looking at, this was a trial. And so it was comparing two vaccines. And on average, they looked like they were performing the exact same. Average weight of the two trial groups was identical. But what we saw was that in that lightest 20%, there was a improvement in performance. And that difference came out to about $2.70 US per head difference in those animals. And so what we then did is we said, oh, well, you know, that's a very substantial number there. And so we wanted to kind of explore that more. And so we actually looked at, I think it was at least two more studies, one more in the US and one in Korea, and saw the exact same things. You know, some of them were on farm trials. Mm-hmm. And so we saw the exact same thing where average performance was very similar, but it was that lightweight tail where we saw, like I said, about $2 to $3 in each case difference, or more value per head.
Yeah, and then it depends a little bit on the local market how much difference they would give
right.
to slaughterhouse. But I think the tendency everywhere around the world is that they prefer to have the animals as uniform as possible.
Exactly, because then by having a more uniform, more homogeneous, you know, you're really going to avoid that problem of, you know, your last load out of a finishing barn being just a kind of a money pit. You know, that's where all of your losses are going to be. So if we can avoid that, have a more uniform herd, you know, this is going to increase your overall economic performance.
I see. And well, if you share that message with your customers nowadays, does it help that you can also show them hard data?
Yes. Showing them hard data, especially if you can show them with their own data, mm-hmm. Which we've done a few times, you know, it becomes very impactful. And, you know, I was recently at a conference, and there was a lot of discussion on diagnostics and disease monitoring. And as I was sitting there listening to that, you know, and that's important because we need to know what disease is in the barn so that we can properly treat it. And so when it was my turn to go up, I said, you know, your data, your slaughter weights, that's your economic diagnostic tool. And so, you know, I would make a strong plea to everyone listening, you know, especially if you're a producer. If you're not currently looking at individual slaughter weights, I would encourage you as strongly as possible to try to get that information from your processor. You know, sometimes they can be a little hesitant to give that up because you know, it's more work for them or whatever reason might be, but put in that effort to get that information. And so with that, you can really start to see, you know, where these damages are occurring. Because if you're just looking at kind of a weekly dashboard or report, and you're looking at average weights going out or average performance, you're going to miss these changes that are happening kind of in the margins, so to speak. And so look at your individual slaughter data, and I think you'll be very surprised by what you see.
I see. Now, since you're working on this so closely, what will be the next steps in this process? I could imagine that you would also be in favor of individual tagging of animals, and that you actually know every animal on its individual basis. I think common practice these days is that you follow animals on a batch basis, but you don't mm-hmm. really know the animals individually. But technically, it's possible. Prices for e-tags are coming down. Is that a development that you could see happening in the future?
I think so. You know, there are, of course, some concerns about that. Like you said, you know, the cost of it, the, you know, lost tags, things like that. But you had mentioned earlier, you know, that with the decrease in the cost of technology, you know, computers are cheaper than they've ever been. We have access to great software, you know, and a lot of this you can do on just Microsoft Excel. You don't need, you know, some fancy statistical tool or piece of software, you know, so we have all of the tools available. And so anytime we can get more information, we're in a place now as an industry to really use that information. You know, you don't need to get into AI forecasting to look at the individual weights that have been tracked, you know, thanks to the tags. You know, you can look at that and say, okay, you know, wow, you know, we are, you know, producing a lot more lightweight pigs than we thought. Or, and I think, you know, most producers, when they look at their data, they'll have enough experience and intuition and know-how to just by looking at it, know what steps need to be taken to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in the past there was often a bit of a hesitation because they were inundated with loads of data. And well, as time moves on and people get more handy with all the tools available.
Exactly.
That anxiety will disappear, I suppose.
It will, you know, because that was one thing. I was speaking at a conference a while back and someone came up to me afterwards and they said, you know, everything that you said is well and good, but you realize that to follow your advice, I need to now hire, you know, some computer expert or data scientist to look this over. I said, well, you know, depending on the size of your farm, that might not be a bad idea, but, you know, a lot of this is a lot simpler to do than you realize. You know, you have a computer, you have Microsoft Excel, you know, then you have everything you need to at least get started. Because mm-hmm. you might discover that it would be a good investment to hire someone to look at this more closely. But it, like I said, we have the tools available to us now to get started.
True. And if people run into trouble, they know now where to turn.
That's right.
If I want to round things up, there is one question that keeps popping up in my mind. Obviously, yeah, you would have to invest in a vaccine, for instance, to obtain that higher amount of uniformity in the. Did you take that into account when you calculated all the results?
Yes. So that's actually a big project we're currently working on in China right now, is looking at, because there are a lot of local vaccines produced in China, so local to China. That are very inexpensive, you know, compared to the imported vaccines. Mm-hmm. And so the big challenge there, though, is that these local vaccines are, they don't perform as well, to put it nicely. They don't perform as well mm-hmm. as these imported vaccines. And so what we're trying to do is show that, you know, you might be saving a little bit of money by getting the less expensive vaccine, but the level of protection that it offers is not as good. And even just the impact that the vaccine has, you know, the response that the pigs have to receiving the vaccine is much more serious than the imported vaccines. And so, you know, what you're doing is, you know, we would say you're stepping over a dollar to pick up a dime.
Makes sense. Yep.
Yeah. You know, that impact on performance has a much more costly impact than, you know, the actual price of the vaccine alone.
Yeah. So sometimes it's better to, well, go for that investment because it pays it back definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. I think that's a good conclusion to leave our listeners with. Unless there was something you wish to add?
Well, I'll just say it once again. If you don't have access to it now, put in all the effort you can to get your slaughter data, individual slaughter weights, and start looking at that. And like I said, that's going to be your economic diagnostic tool. And there's going to be a wealth of information there that will open up a whole new world of possibilities for you. So that would be my closing message.
Fantastic. Now, I think that our listeners have learned a lot from you. So thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
A last reminder to our audience before we close off, you will be able to find this website, this podcast also back through the regular podcast channels, as well as at the website of Pig Progress. Just search for Meet the Expert by Pig Progress and Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. For now, I thank everybody for listening. I thank Lance Mulberry for being with us today, and hopefully we'll be back soon, and we'll can welcome this audience back again with the next episode of this podcast series. Thank you very much. Goodbye.